Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paul, let's go out to our good friend Dan Zangrilli. He's at the ballpark. He's also on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Dan, did I just see what I actually saw last week in Colorado? Michael Taylor came up with no outs and runners on first and second, and they didn't have him bunt, so he popped out to the shortstop. Today, unless my eyes deceived me, there were two outs, runners on second and third, and he tried to bunt, and then he struck out anyway. What is happening?
Ah, man. So I must admit, palms up, Joe. I didn't see the play. I heard Austin describe it. I was in the bathroom with my four-year-old. So I'll have to go back and look at the videotape. But, yeah, there was something with Mike Ribello on a ball that O'Neill Cruz could have scored on, I think, in game one of this series. And Ribello throws his arms up very quickly, has Cruz put on the brakes, and then tries to start the engine back up and wave him home. And, yeah, I'll have to watch the tape. But it sounds like potentially missed opportunity, which I don't know. I think I'm taking it just in – you know, in a vacuum without having seen it, I'm taking a gamble there and trying to make the Reds make a play as opposed to leave it to the hands of one Michael A. Taylor for the two-out RBI hit.
Well, I think with two outs, too, Connor Joe's running. He's getting in a pretty good jump, you know what I mean? I honestly look at that and I say, I have no idea how he didn't score. The ball was hit into the gap. It was bouncing away from the outfielder. You got to go get it. You know what I mean? You got to go take that shot.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not sure what, you know, all the circumstances were, what the jump was like. And again, just palms up. I haven't seen it to be able to like say
well,
one way or the other.
Suffice to say, you don't want to leave Michael A. Taylor in a position where he needs to help you offensively. This guy's down to 197. How long can you live with a center fielder like this?
Yeah, well, it depends on how good he is defensively, and he's very, very good, perhaps the best in baseball. So I think we have an Austin Hedges 2.0 scenario where there's a lot of intangibles and defensive value, but clearly not even close to what you need offensively. And in the case of Hedges last year, you sort of knew what you were going to get. In the case of Taylor, and this is a guy that hit, I think, over 20 home runs, maybe 22 last year, if memory serves. So there's plenty more that they should and need to be getting from Michael A. Taylor. The question then becomes, do you add this to the list of things that they need, along with a couple of relievers, maybe a starter, a corner outfield first base bat? I think they're going to live with Taylor and ride him out as, you know, as long as he's giving them some really, really good outfield defense, which he is.
Which makes him a defensive replacement guy.
Not necessarily, no.
That's what he should be. A guy that comes in maybe to late in the game as your defensive replacement guy, and then occasionally on a Sunday, you know, when you need a Sunday lineup, throw him in there. But to me, you know, it's almost an automatic out when he's up.
It is, but, you know, there's a lot of value that he would bring from innings 1 through 8 defensively. That's assuming, I mean, are you valuing, Paul, the defensive side of it, especially at that position? I think that there's a lot of stuff that you could say that he changes the game in some respects. And, you know, you weigh that up against the alternatives, which, and unfortunately there aren't much of any of those that are pushing him out of the position where you would have a tough decision to make, unfortunately.
Dan Zangrilli, he's at the ballpark taking it in from the stands, it sounds like, with his son. Brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Social media's biggest loser, Donnie Football, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Reserve your consultation today at awaken180weightloss.com. Donnie's lost an entire football here. The guy looks great. Dan, you had some serious questions about Shelty's game management last night explain to people your biggest issue with how Shelty managed that game.
Well, it's, you know, a 2-1 game, and in the eighth inning, he hits for Jason DeLay, which I think was the right move. Cruz obviously has the ability to change the swing, change the game with one swing. Then he has, naturally, because he hit for the catcher, a defensive decision to make. And I thought that rather than, you know, Cruz be taken out one for one, you had another opportunity, say, the guy who was playing shortstop that isn't hitting particularly well, Jared Triolo, that you could have put Yosemite Grandal's spot in, because Grandal naturally has to come into the ninth inning and catch. And if you're in a position to maybe tie the game or take the lead, or you go to extra innings, you'd like O'Neill Cruz to be a factor in the game some way, somehow, rather than just remove what I would consider one of, if not your biggest offensive threat. My opinion, didn't feel that that showed a ton of foresight. Now, the counter argument to that is, I believe Triolo's spot came up seventh. Cruz would have been in the ninth spot of the batting order, so you would have had Grandal there, and then it becomes a question of Grandal versus Triolo, and from where I sit, I don't see much of an advantage one way or the other, Triolo over Grandal, Grandal over Triolo. So I thought that that would have been a fairly simple decision to make. I took issue with it. I didn't think that he was thinking ahead. All of the circumstances, especially with Cruz's health, I'm not certain. But, you know, that was, for me, left a lot to be desired from a managerial in-game tactician standpoint.
Well, one thing that is becoming clear right now is that your hottest hitter might be Rowdy Tellez. And would you play him against lefties, or would you continue to do what, you know, sort of what they've tried to do, where they, you know, play him primarily against righties?
Yeah, I think you don't want to mess up what you've got going on with Tellez right now. And I mean, you can even also, Paul, to maybe double back here in the ninth inning, should Tellez have been the guy instead of Sawinski leading off the ninth and pinch hitting for Connor Joe, I wouldn't, against really tough left-handers, much like Shelton will manage O'Neill Cruz and Sawinski. I don't think you want to, I don't know, when you have Connor Joe, who's historically been pretty good against left-handed pitching, and Edward Olivares, who's been better than any of the alternatives that you would have against left-handed pitching. I think from a matchup standpoint, you gotta be careful there and protect Tellez and other left-handed hitters as much as you can.
Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Dan, do we know yet who's pitching for the Pirates tomorrow against the Rays?
No, Derek Shelton does not meet with the media day game after night game. I guess that's fairly standard in MLB protocol. I'm going to guess Martin Perez, because he's thrown his bullpen simulated games, and we haven't heard anything that would otherwise set him back or delay a potential return. I think what they were mulling around, and again, we didn't have an opportunity to confirm this, as to whether or not they would send Perez out on a rehab. If he does need an extra day or there's still more questions surrounding him, there's always another bullpen day. They haven't thrown Ortiz since he threw in Colorado, so that's an option. I'm sure they could roll Majinski back. He threw last night, so he would be in play. But if I'm to guess, I'm thinking that it's going to be Martin Perez.
Oh, well, that would be interesting if they brought him back, because now all of a sudden they would have their rotation intact. And it would allow them maybe to use some other guys in different roles. But the bullpen game is interesting. And down the road, when they're trying to push Jared Jones and Paul Skenes maybe back a day and give them extra day, and it might be a better option than the, you know, six-man rotation nonsense that we saw earlier, where they left themselves short in the bullpen, wouldn't it?
Well, that's the tough conversation that they need to have, because I think everybody would agree Jared Jones and Paul Skenes are the priority to try to keep them in play, assuming the Pirates are able to hang around and stay in this thing in late July, August, and you don't start getting to those red line numbers where you're looking at a potential shutdown. So I think the six-man rotation is really important for this team this year. The other side of that, Paul, is when they've gone to it in these very short stints, being short in the bullpen is a real issue. I'm more inclined to try the six-man rotation again to see if they could do it. It's going to take some of the relievers stepping up. The bullpen is performing better than the last time around they tried this experiment, so I'm compelled to go back to it again because, for me, Jones and Skeens are a priority. If they're to do anything this year, Jones and Skeens, along with Keller, they're going to be paramount in getting them there. So you might have to arrange the deck chairs and have the sun revolve around them a little bit, but guess what? That's what you got to do because I think that's really the only formula. Assuming the Pirates are able to hang around, it's the only formula that will give them any sort of pathway to do anything meaningful.
Dan, we appreciate the time. Enjoy your time with your son. Are we golfing tomorrow, Dan? What's happening here?
I sent you a question yesterday as to when you would like to go, and you replied back with the capital letter L. I don't know what that means.
That was a butt dial. I don't know what that meant. Oh, when?
I thought you were calling me something.
And oh, I'm good to go right after the show, of course.
He's a jerk.
But we can do this privately, not on the radio.
He's
thank you, Dan.
A jerk.
You replied with a capital letter L. What was I to do with that?
I see it now. I didn't even know I did it. It was a butt dial. I apologize, but I'm ready to go.
That's
if you are.
Damn.
We need you and I need to bond. We need to have some quality time together.
What do you think about that, Carl?
Thank you, Dan.
Bye.
There he goes, Dan Zangrilli. He's become a legend, huh, Paul?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So where is he? Where are you guys trying to golf at?
I don't know. He said he had a place, and I want to do it. What about Perez coming back into the line, into the rotation here? I think that could be a good thing. Or would you rather do a bullpen game tomorrow with Ortiz? Is it a good thing? I don't know.
I think Perez, when he was healthy, was good. I like the idea of putting a guy on the mound that might be able to go 7 or 8 innings for you.
And I like the idea, suddenly, of this bullpen being relatively healthy and having pretty good personnel.
Yeah.
Now that Bednar, Chapman seem to be on track. Holderman has been good, just flat out really good, actually. Then you have Majinski, you have Ortiz. You're starting to build a real bullpen where the pieces make sense and are healthy and pitching well. And that's a big deal.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah. All right. What's cooking? Brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly, in the 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. All right, Paul, I mentioned earlier in the show that Antonio Brown, where was this? What was this with Ryan Clark?
The Pivot Podcast.
The Pivot Podcast had some interesting things to say about how does he want him and Ben and Le'Veon to go into the Hall of Fame altogether? I don't think that's going to happen, much as he might want it to. In fact, it's not going to happen. What else did he say?
You don't think AB is going to get to the Hall of Fame?
No. I think he should.
I think he will.
I don't.
I think he'll
eventually get there. I'll tell you why. Speaking, we had this long talk earlier, Paul, about baseball writers keeping deserving players out of the Hall of Fame based on the morals clause.
Right.
I never knew this. This was before you and I started doing these shows together. I had Gary Myers on from the New York Daily News.
Okay.
He's a voter for the Football Hall of Fame. And he basically said, without meaning to, that there's a character clause in the Football Hall of Fame. And I always thought it was strictly, and this is what made it good and right, strictly what you did on the field between the lines, between the whistles. That's it.
And I thought that that's how it was explained, too.
Listen to this. Myers, I brought up Antonio Brown with him. This was like 6 months ago, somewhere around there, maybe a little sooner than that. And he referenced T.O. And he told me this. He said, the case of Terrell Owens was fascinating. It took him till the third year to get in. I can tell you unequivocally, Myers said, the reason he didn't get in the first 2 years is because the guy was a knucklehead and a locker room destroyer and was always ripping his quarterback. Myers goes on to say, and the Hall of Fame, and this kind of surprised me, he said, they asked us to differentiate between what Owens did on the field and what he did in the locker room, which is different than Lawrence Taylor off the field having a cocaine problem. And they said, this is Gary Myers, a voter talking, the Hall of Fame said, quote, the locker room is an extension of the playing field, so we could absolutely consider how Owens conducted himself in the locker room. I had never heard that before.
That's the only time I've ever heard that.
And he said that will extend to Antonio Brown, which is why I don't think Antonio Brown's going to get in.
But he got in the third year.
T.O. did, right?
Yeah, so I mean, right. So it might delay it, but I think eventually he'll get in. Although, I will say this.
I think they're going to consider that way worse than what T.O., anything T.O. did.
The running off the field with the Tampa, with his shirt off.
Yeah.
That image will not leave a lot of voters'
I know.
Heads.
That's what I'm saying. Which was, I mean, essentially, he said that there's a character clause. That's the way I took that. What else do we have AB saying here? Limitless wonder.
He was talking about how great the Steeler culture was and somewhat how he took for granted the amount of people, the quality of people that were in the locker room.
You know, championship culture is about, you know, it is the growth of the game. That, you know, you never know, you know, the players. The game never changes, it's just the players. Players like myself, Ben, Le'Veon, special players, you know, Martavis Bryant, different players that just pouncy. You know what I mean? It's Ramon Foster, Marcus Gilbert, you know what I mean? David DeCastro. You know what I'm saying? A lot of us get the glory from being in those great positions of receiving the ball and, you know, being in those intangibles, but the camaraderie of the brotherhood of, you know what I'm saying, going to work, the meetings, the walkthroughs, the belief, you know what I'm saying, the journey, and those things what, you know what I mean, make football worth it. You know what I'm saying? I feel like the media could show the little things, but the journey with your brothers, training camp, getting bloody every day and preparing for long years and having that success and coming to a team where it's like Ryan Clark and great defenders with Polamalu, Ike Taylor, you know what I'm saying? So many, you know what I mean? Lawrence Timmons.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, just to be a part of so much, you know, so much greatness and to witness it and to be in that locker room in 2010 as a rookie going to the Super Bowl, you know what I'm saying? Those moments live with you.
That just makes me sad. And the names that he mentioned, I go back and look at the 17 Steelers and I see Ben in his prime with 28 touchdowns and Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant and Antonio Brown and Juju. They had a three-headed monster going back to Juju's rookie year, especially. What a waste.
Yeah.
What a waste of an all. That's an all-time talented offense in Steeler history.
Absolutely.
It's up there with the best of the 70s.
Absolutely. We've said that how many times looking at that?
It just makes you sick.
Right. It really does.
And then they go out and lose to Blake Blanken-Bortles on their home field that year. What are we doing? They lost twice to him.
That's
and
ridiculous.
I understand. I think that was the year of the Shazier injury. But it's still Blake Bortles. You can't find a way around Blake Bortles in the playoff game? Come on. You give up 45 points, and Ben, for all his numbers in that game, was awful and helped put them in a hole by giving them an interception deep in Steeler territory and then fumbling away a ball that got picked up and returned for a touchdown. So I'm glad
Bortles.
He threw for 900 yards
right.
after that. But
that was the thing. There was the Blake Bortles game to me is the game that probably – because I think that team, that was the one time I thought that team has what it takes to go maybe to beat New England the next week.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, they play New England, you know, Brady's going to, you know, we remember Brady had some absurd, obscene numbers against the Steelers, like ridiculous. And it was like, if you're going to beat this, if you're going to beat Brady, you know what I mean? Back when that team was still rolling and Brady was rolling, you had to score points. I thought that that team, the Steeler team, and I never thought they were going to get dragged by Jacksonville the way they did.
214 yards, a 94 rating, a touchdown, and no picks for blank any swear word you can think of, Bortles. Come on. That team again had Ben, Le'Veon, A.B., Vance McDonald, a pretty good tight end, Martavis Bryant, and Juju. And Juju. And by the time they got going in that game, it was way too late. It was 28-7 with 2 minutes left in the half. So anybody who thinks, oh, they scored, that offense still scored 42, they stunk.
And not just that. What was the final score? 45-42. Right. It was 45-35. And
the defense was horrendous.
It was 45-35. And if I'm not mistaken, the Steelers scored on the last play of the game. It was really...
Which was an unbelievable sight to witness.
Yeah.
When you're down by 10, to have Tomlin not go for a field goal and an onside kick.
Right.
How do you go to the last play of the game? Not that that cost them the game, but what are we doing? Anybody who's ever played Madden knows you got to kick the field goal and then go onside city limits, right?
So we did in the Madden tournament, or the college football tournament that we did.
Let's throw a touchdown with 1 second left instead of kicking a field goal and trying an onside kick. When here's the real kicker here, pun intended. They scored on what was essentially a Hail Mary at the end of the half when Ben threw it up to Martavis.
Right.
They had Martavis, Juju, Antonio Brown. They had Hail Mary threats all over the place. How do you not kick a field goal with like 30 seconds left and then an onside kick?
Right.
How in the world do you go to the last play of the game?
Poor management.
I know that didn't cost him the game. I can hear Ed Bouchette yelling at me because we had an argument the next day.
But it didn't. You didn't give yourself the best chance to win the game.
Or any chance at the end.
And I always say to people, would you rather score a touchdown with no time on the clock when you're losing by 10? Or would you rather kick a field goal with 10 seconds left so you can at least have one maybe shot
you
at Hail Mary?
You have to do that.
I don't get it.
There's
I don't
no
understand
other
it.
Choice.
There's no 10-point play.
Oh, and yes, the defense was just god-awful. They kept cutting it to a touchdown in the second half. It was 28-21, then Leonard Fournette, part of like a long drive. Then it's 35-28, and somebody named Tommy Bohannon catches a pass from Blake Bortles. Then it's 42-35, and let them go right down the field for Josh Lambeau. What a disaster. All right, let's go to Tex in the city. Did we do what's cooking? Did we do the 50-minute mark? Yes.
Yes, yes, we did.
Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy, 24 Silverado LT crew cab, up to $7,500 in rebates. Full terms and qualifications at sunchevy.com. High of 93 today with cloudy skies. I don't even remember, was I doing the show with Mulsey or Ron at that point? I don't remember.
I remember that game.
Steelers were a 7-point favorite.
What was the first touchdown? Was that a pick six?
What was that, City Limits?
That was the computer making a sound before this.
Somebody. Oh, I like that. I don't remember, Paul.
I just remember there was a pick six, and then there maybe was another interception. There was the fumble that was returned. I just remember it was a disaster.
Both teams reached the over on their own. The over-under for the game was 40.5 points. How many times do both teams get the over on their own? That can't happen often, does it? Paul?
Probably doesn't. I'm trying to think. I'm just trying to think of... it doesn't happen probably almost never.
How many times in history has it happened in
probably
a playoff game?
Probably almost never. That's the thing, because they're usually not that far off with the over-under. That's what I mean.
Wonder Twin? The over-under was 40.5, and both teams got it on their own. That's incrinculent.
Yeah, that's pretty unreal.
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to think of like playoff games where everyone thought it was going to be really low scoring, and it turned into that.
What about the joke that was that Cleveland playoff game? Did both teams get the over in that one?
I would have to agree. What was the final on that one?
That was the pouncy snapping the ball over Ben's head to start the game.
Did both teams get over 40?
Let me see the box score here. It was 48-37. The over-under was 47. So, no, both teams didn't get it.
No.
They didn't get that one. We have a hell of a pitching duel going on here, don't we, Paul?
Yeah, Michael A. Taylor's playing defense out there in center.
I mean, he caught a fly ball right to him. Yeah, how about a hit once a month? Let's go to Chase Claypool had a touchdown in that game? He had two. If I would have told you that Chase Claypool had two touchdown catches in the playoff loss to Cleveland, would you have believed me?
No.
Paul?
I didn't even think Chase Claypool had any playoff touchdowns.
That's another one where Tomlin factored in. They're down 42-29 with tons of time left, and he doesn't go for it on a fourth down. I think it might have even been right around the 50. So he gives the ball back to the Browns.
That's
oh, my
right.
God. Remember that one?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot all about that.
If either one of you can name the other... Chase Claypool had two touchdown catches, okay?
That could be a problem.
James Conner had a run.
He got it.
He got it.
Eric and...
Eric Ebron.
Nah, that was going to be my trivia question. All right, who had the other touchdown pass from Ben? Paul? In the playoff loss to Cleveland, Claypool had two touchdown catches. Eric Ebron had a touchdown catch. Who had the last one? Or the other one?
Jesse James.
Vance McDonald.
Juju.
Oh, wow. I forgot all about him.
Give us a couple texts. You read them. We rank them 1 to 10. Please, City Limits.
There's not many, but one
texter. We don't need many. We're almost to the end of the show.
Said, Willie Mays. How about this? I showed this on the Sportsnet broadcast. Willie Mays had an OPS of over 1,100 off of Steve Blass in his career.
Steve Blass told me that Willie Mays beat him to the bag one time on his first at-bat against him.
Wow.
That's wild.
I just saw Steve Blass on the broadcast here.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I'm going to look at some of the really highest scoring games now tomorrow when I come back. I'm going to see if I can come up with, because that's an interesting thing. Both teams were over the total.
Yeah.
For the entire game.
One more Wonder Boy. That one sucked.
Yeah, there's not a lot of spectacular texts that came in for Texts in the City today, but Greg says, if Braxton Ashcraft continues to prove he's a good starting pitcher in AAA, they should call him up ASAP. That's his name, Joe.
You got to be careful with that name. It could go any one of a number of ways. Yeah, why not? I don't care who pitches that game. As long as it's somebody
anyone.
I don't want to go back to the bullpen games. Maybe Ortiz.
We were also told we did the quiz show totally wrong today.
Why is that?
By the texters.
Why is that?
I don't care what they said. It was a good segment. It was fun.
Why did we do it wrong?
Well, because we had all three of us with Bob in here continuing to try to guess. And it's supposed to be if you get it wrong, then no point.
No, that's wrong. I've done the quiz show for many, many years. You get to keep... half the fun is keeping guessing.
Somebody else said Joe should get a free bowl of soup with that hat.
You like the UB bucket hat?
Joe, can you fix the monitor, please?
Here's another. Baldwin Baseball, still looking for a coach. Come on, Joe.
Did I break it?
Joe?
No, is that broken?
Joe?
No, you moved it. It's moved. Can you straighten it out again, please? Never mind. I got it.
The show's over. We don't need to do any adjusting. Can you plug in that
That's
plug?
For Pony. It needs to be adjusted for Pony.
What was the last text?
Somebody asked you to be the high school baseball coach at my alma mater.
Where's that?
Baldwin.
Okay. I'll coach Baldwin baseball. Yeah.
All right, great. I'll let the athletic director know.
I'll consult with Shelty.
You'll get your lineup decisions.
Use all the wrong pinch hitters and everything else.
We have the girls basketball coach from Baldwin in the building.
How do you use the bullpen?
Who's that?
Jamal.
Oh, yeah, Jamal. That's right.
We call him Jammin' Jamal because he's from Whammo.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye.